the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Hey, we welcome you back. End of the week. We made it, folks. We did it. That's right. It's time to get going with another edition of Bucket Strategy Investing. We got money issues discussed, dissected, and resolved, we hope, right here. You got to take part in the program. I'm joined again today by Professor Rick Plum, Certified Financial Planner. I'm Johnny Dean. Plum is our Chief Brain Trust Advisor. We're going to start off the hour with a discussion on what's known as the accumulation phase and the, we'll call it the distribution phase. Some people call it the decumulation, but you have accumulation and the distribution phase of your financial life. Now, you probably know about the accumulation stage, right? It's where you work your whole life, you save up the cash that you need in order to stop working. But there is a second part of this, and it's all too often overlooked, and that is the distribution phase. You know how to put money in, but how do you take money out? The strategies for the two phases are certainly linked, but in many ways they are complete opposites. That's if you're doing it correctly. So we'll tell you all about that coming up in just a moment. We'll strategize with you, tell you what you need to know. Wealth education, best strategy advice you're going to find anywhere. In my opinion, it's all just ahead. Right now is your chance to call us with your money questions. Phone lines are open, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. You can also email us here in the studio at wealthed.com. You look for the Find Your Answer link on the upper part of the page. Send us your question, and we'll answer it. We'll answer it right here on the show, live on the program. Got a lot of those to get to as well. Professor Rick Plum here again, courtesy of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Rick is a certified financial planner. Rick is our chief brain trust strategist, and he will remind you of this, as would I. You need to take advantage of the experience and the knowledge of the brain trust. These are the advisors who can look over your individual goals, help you design a plan that works for you and your own specific goals. Call them at Lucia Capital Group. Their phone number, 800-644-1150. Get a buckets plan that's tailored to meet your needs. Again, off air, the number at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. We thank them once again for bringing everybody this hour of the program. Our number here in the studio, 877-PLANNER, 877-752-6637. A lot of stuff to talk about, and including maybe not later this hour, but maybe next hour, a couple of leftover things from yesterday's discussion on Roth conversions. We had a lot of calls on that. In fact, it was almost the entire program that we wound up talking about it, because there's so many different ways you can go on that. But we'll cover that later on, if not this hour, then in another hour. Now, we got two things here, Professor Plum. You got two phases of your financial life. You got the one where you're building the portfolio, and then you got the other one that you're
living off of it.
Very few people.
We all look forward to it. We just don't tend to pay the same attention to it as we do when we're building a portfolio, although there's a lot of people that are building a portfolio that pay no attention to it. They signed up for their 401k when they started with the job, and they haven't looked at it since. Now, that's both good and bad, depending upon the level that you're savings, but accumulating wealth. John talked about the two phases, accumulation and distribution. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be retirement distribution. There are other reasons we distribute the assets that we've accumulated, but you have to have an accumulation side of the house to have a distribution side of the house, unless you inherit it. Now, not everybody's going to inherit money, so most people do need to at least look at some portion of accumulating wealth. And the rules and the techniques and the strategies for accumulating wealth are one set of rules, and they're different than when you start distributing that wealth to yourself or to whatever cause it is that you need.
Yeah, I heard you.
You know, have to be retirement. It could be college.
I've heard you mention too that there's a sort of an analogy of going up a hill and going down a hill.
Well, I was playing around with different analogies off the air to see if they would work.
This worked okay. Go ahead.
You know, if you're going up a hill with a vehicle towing something, you want a lot of power. You want a lot of torque. You have a whole set of parameters you need to drive that force up the hill to accumulate that wealth. But once you get to the top of the hill, those same forces that helped you get to the top of the hill aren't necessarily required for going down the hill. You have a whole new set of rules. You need really good brakes, and you need to be able to stop a significant fast decline when you're coming down the other side of the hill. So having that big motor, big torque, big horsepower going up is required, but it's not so required on the other side. And so we need to be able to change gears, so to speak. Huh? Does that one work?
Yeah. Wow, you're just, I'm going to let you roll on this one. Change gears.
And let me roll.
Yeah? Uh-huh. Okay, there's another one. Well, you have the guy, you're the guy who likes to tow things anyway.
I like horsepower, yes.
You're a happy guy if you got, 500, 600, 2,000 pounds coming behind you.
Oh, please. Yeah, that's lightweight. Bring it on. Let's get some big stuff going. No, but I mean, it's all about what is it that you're trying to accomplish and putting the appropriate techniques and strategies in place to achieve the goal. The first goal is to accumulate wealth. And what are the ways to accumulate wealth? Well, obviously, you got to save. So the auto enrollments in your 401k, when you enroll, automatic escalators. I really like the automatic. Can you tell this? I like automatic because if it's automatic, it tends to get done. If it's up to us to write a check at the end of the month, there's usually too much month compared to the budget. We end up shortchanging ourselves. However, if we have it taken out of our accounts, out of our checks, before we ever see it, somehow we make the checkbook work for the month. So always pushing the envelope on the way up, continuing to have money taken out systematically. Ooh, there might be something called dollar cost averaging involved. And while a good friend listener of the show the other day pointed out that dollar cost averaging does not guarantee a return, it does potentially help receive a return, especially over longer periods of time. And so that volatility that the market provides. And so there's lots of different rules for accumulating wealth. When you have very little wealth and you're just starting out, you know, this is like the old adage that the person has nothing to lose, there's nobody more truly free than somebody who has nothing to lose. You know, if you're putting in $100 a month, you don't mind the significant volatility because you actually want that significant volatility. You'd like to see the market crash and go down. Well, maybe not crash, but go down quite a bit so you can start buying in at a lower value, a continued lower value, and trying to accumulate as many shares, as many pieces of the pie as you can at a very low cost. And because if you have a long enough time horizon and it recovers, then you actually make some money. What you don't want as a 20-year-old is to see an increasing market that never goes back because you never had a chance to accumulate assets except for at an increasingly higher price. That's a completely different game for somebody on the other side of the fence who's actually starting to distribute assets. But in accumulating wealth, it's all about the discipline of saving. And then once we've got the discipline of having money taken out of our hands and put basically sent ahead for us by putting it into something else, something that we're not spending today. We're not immediately, basically immediate gratification. We're doing some type of a delayed gratification by putting it aside for the future, that rainy day fund, the Christmas fund, whatever you want to call it. Now we have a decision of, okay, how do we invest it? Or are we just going to save it? So there are lots of ways to deal with this. When we have very few assets, you're only going to be dealing with one or two investments. When we have larger amounts of assets, then now we're starting to get into more of a risk management style. At beginning, that volatility really helps us because we're continually putting money in on a systematic basis. But as we start accumulating wealth, and I'm not even talking about getting out to retirement, but once we have some money there, now we're worried about losing it. Now we've got something that we don't want to lose. So how do we then transition from don't care about the risk, let's just take it and go for it, roll the dice, to a more balanced type portfolio? Does that give a little foreshadowing there? Yeah, you want to then start spreading out the risk between the different types of asset classes. Now, it may be that you spread it out between different types of asset classes still within a stock or a mutual fund type of investment, and you don't go to the bonds and the other things that are even more conservative. But as you grow in your accounts, you're going to want to start safening up parts of it. The first step is diversification.
Now, you know, now we're get into the distribution phase.
We haven't even gotten to the distribution phase.
Right.
We're just getting up there in our values.
You're getting up there and you're getting yourself set up. And what you tend to read a lot is that as you get closer, all you really need to do is lessen your equity holdings and then increase your fixed income a little bit more. And in fact, it should be a measure of your age as you get older, how much more you should do so that eventually it balances out.
Well, it's not a measure of your age. It's a measure of your goals. Because if you're trying to achieve a goal of maybe paying for college, an expensive college for kids, that happens in many cases well before 60, 65. And so if it's happening at 45, then they're saying, if I've got college next year for this goal, and I'm 45 years old, 50 years old, then I should have 50 to 55% of my portfolio still in stocks. Well, that's not appropriate for the goal at hand. If the money needs to be spent next year and over the next 3, 4, 5 years, that is not the same type of goal where I can afford to have stocks. So we look at what is the time horizon for the goal and allocate appropriately. But as we get closer to the goal, most of the time we're talking about retirement. Retirement is at that 65-ish, give or take five or, you know, years or so. Pulling back the reins makes sense, but how you do it is not just do the same thing all the time that everybody else does.
No, and now when we come back, we'll talk about the other side of this, which is the distribution phase, which is equally important as the accumulation phase, but which one is that, which very few people understand. All right, 877-PLANNER, you got a question on this? Or Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, talking to you about your money here on the radio and television sets. If you have questions, we do have lines open right now, 877-752-6637. I want to remind you, too, that there's another chance to meet the Brain Trust. In fact, if you've never seen the Brain Trust in person, and I'm talking about Professor Rick Plum, Terry Keyes, and some of the local advisors, you can do so over the next several weeks, depending on, you know, when you're listening to this. But if you want to catch the Brain Trust in February, a couple of locations, February 20th, Saturday morning in Las Vegas, Nevada. A couple of weeks away, so you can join us in Las Vegas on Saturday, February 20th. You go to wealthed.com. WealthEd.com. It's all free. You just sign up. Tell us you're going to be there. And Las Vegas on the 20th. Seattle, Washington on the 27th. And Phoenix, Arizona on Saturday, March 12th. That means Las Vegas, Seattle, and Phoenix are the next three. There will be more locations after that. If you want to know right now where you can meet the Brain Trust, sign up and get your questions answered. You go to WealthEd, W-E-A-L-T-H, WealthEd.com. And sign up there. As I said, they're all free. And the main thing is you get to learn about retirement income strategies. This is for 2016. Every year is different. Maybe you've been to one in the previous years and you need an update. This is what they're going to be doing, talking to you about that in Las Vegas, Seattle, and Phoenix, Arizona. Once again, WealthEd.com. And speaking of WealthEd.com, you can join us on the email list. You go to the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. As I said, I do want to get to a few more of these emails. Let's get to one from Ned, who's got a question in Ryerson, Arizona. I have a, I have a 90-10 stock bond allocation. Okay, so 90% stocks, 10% bonds, which is down about 9% the past couple of months.
That's about right.
In fact, I'm surprised it's only 9%. Ned says, I'm not going to panic, but I'm wondering what the best move is now. Do I put more into the account? Do I reallocate the stock bond mix? Do I take money out or do I do nothing? Another young person, he says, I'm 29. I'm in the 25% tax bracket. Also, is this a good time to do tax loss harvesting?
I mean, you could do some tax loss harvesting. I'm not sure what, you know, this is not at the end of the year. Usually we're doing that at the end of the year to offset gains. If you've got a lot of losses and you don't think you'll have any gains for the year, then doing some loss harvesting to offset against other income can help if you're in a 25% income tax bracket or higher. So, I mean, it is something to think about, but it's nothing imperative that you do right now. You're 20-something years old.
29, yeah.
My question isn't why you're 90-10. It's why you're not 100% stocks, why you're not down 10 or 12%. You know, this is obviously, or I shouldn't say obviously, by the way you're investing it, it is long-term money. It is not money that you're going to use for the down payment of a house in a couple of weeks. It is not money that you're going to use for an emergency fund. This is money you're looking 10-plus years into the future or more. So being down, you're going to be down 10-plus percent on your long-term growth portfolio many times over the next 40 years between now and when you ultimately retire. It is not a time to panic. It is a time, yes, continue to add to it. continue to dollar cost average, continue to save and invest for the long haul. Now, I am not saying it's at the bottom that we're going to turn around right now, but it's at a better time to buy than a year ago, better time to buy than a month ago, better time to buy than a quarter ago. Will it be the better time today than a quarter from now? I don't know. But what I'm saying is buy now, assuming this is long-term investment money, buy now, buy again next month, buy again the following month, buy every month, continue to buy into that volatility and grow this portfolio over time. As John was mentioning earlier, we've had 8 bear markets of a downturn of 20% or more over the past 50 years. You're going to see bear markets, and those are just great buying opportunities. Is this the bottom? Oh, probably not. We could go further down on than this. Maybe today, maybe tomorrow even. Just keep buying. It's like voting in Chicago. Buy early, buy often. Just keep doing it.
Now, you're saying this to Ned because
he's 20-something years
old. He's 29 years old. Now, I should ask you this. If Ned were, 60, would your advice be the same, similar, or would you suggest perhaps doing something else? And again, I don't mean,
if Ned were 60,
he wouldn't be 90-10 stock.
And he's saying that his long-term growth component is 90-10. I'd be telling exactly the same thing. If his entire portfolio was 90-10, I'd want to know a little bit more about him and say, well, when you ultimately retire, or are you already retired, where is your income going to come from? If you are so blessed as to have a pension in Social Security that is greater than your needs are ever expected to be, you can afford to be that aggressive. And by definition, this could be very long-term money. If on the other side, you say you're going to need to start withdrawing or are withdrawing money from this portfolio, either now or in the near future, then you need, forget the fact that we're down or up, it wouldn't matter. You need to make your portfolio less aggressive. You need to start creating a strategy to be able to take the money out of the portfolio. And a portfolio that's down 9% over a month is not a good portfolio to start taking an income from. So let's create the strategy to make sure what you have suits what you're trying to accomplish. But if he was talking purely about his long-term growth portfolio, the answer is the same. Either hold on because it's a 10-15 year investment, or add to it because it's a 10-15 year investment. But that's only assuming that's a 10-year, 15-year investment or more.
Now, you see, this goes against some of the conventional wisdom that we hear. You said if this were his long-term, and I said if he were 60 years old, he's 29, but if he were 60, and you said this were his long-term growth component of his portfolio, you would still say the same thing. Keep buying, and you're talking about, say, an equity-type portfolio,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, yes, very much so.
Yeah. Well, for somebody who would say, but when you're 60, you should only be maybe 30, 40% stocks.
Well, that may
Why
be true.
Why would you keep buying?
But that may be true on the overall portfolio, but we weren't talking about his overall portfolio. We were talking about the money that he doesn't need to touch for 15 years. And that's one portion of the portfolio. And that's why I said if he doesn't need to touch it for 15 years because he has plenty of other income from other sources, he can be long-term minded with this money. But if he needs the money in the near future, then that is the wrong portfolio, and he needs to reallocate. And as I mentioned, it doesn't matter whether he's down or up. He may be down 9% now, but it could be a lot worse in the not-too-distant future. So reallocating at least some of the money now into a safer position so you can draw some money out of it makes a lot of sense. Stop the bleeding before it turns into a hemorrhage. Let's take a look at, can you even still afford to retire after a loss? And we saw this in 2009, 2010. People were 90-10%, 90 stock, 10% bonds in 2007, and they wanted to retire in 2010, and they didn't pull back the aggressiveness, and they thought they had enough money to retire. They just needed a little bit more juice out of it, so they kept going for it. And then 2008 happened, and their portfolio dropped 30%. Well, if they were almost there in 2007, they weren't anywhere close to it in 2009 after the market dropped 30%. So they couldn't retire, assuming they kept their job, they couldn't retire in 2010 like they wanted to. And that is a problem when you turn the control of your decision-making time horizon from yourself to the market. It may not be looking out for your best interest, so do it. Take control of it so it is looking out for your best interest.
Well, and you have to be looking out for your best interest. The market couldn't care less if you're retiring tomorrow, next week, or 10 years. Does it? No. It'll do what it's going to do. 877-PLANNER, our number. Some lines open. Call now with your money questions, some more emails, and investor behavior. Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. We're answering your money questions. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. We're here every day at this time. We're here till the top of the hour. So if you have a money question, you need it answered before said top of hour, you call right now, 877-752-6637. Emails, yes. Get to those in just a second. That's at wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com. Click on the Find Your Answer link. And speaking of wealthed.com, that's where you can go to sign up for one of the many workshops that are happening across the country with the Brain Trust over the next couple of weeks, months, whatever it happens to be. Now, if you're listening or watching us, there's a pretty good chance that we're going to be in a city or town or at least a zip code near you. So what you should do is go over to wealthed.com, and look at the schedule. I think there's still several cities left before we get to the end of the spring series. So the best thing to do, as I said, you go over to wealthed.com, meet the Brain Trust, Professor Plum, Terry Keyes, and the local advisors will be traveling around talking to you about your money, talking to you about strategies. And one of the cool things about these workshops, Professor Plum, is that you get to find out what's on people's minds, you know, in different sections of the country.
And different sections have different considerations.
They really do. I mean, you know, some have more Social Security concerns.
Some are all annuities.
Some are all annuities. I know in the Phoenix area, we get a lot of those in the Phoenix area.
Different areas have a lot of real estate questions, depending on where we are. We used to get a lot of real estate questions in Nevada and Phoenix, but in Arizona, but then it died down for a little bit. Different kinds of questions, I guess, we got after that.
I remember Las Vegas was big for many years on real estate, and then all of a sudden, of course, you know.
It wasn't. And then going back even further than that, back in the heyday of the dot-coms, the Bay Area was ridiculous with real estate questions.
Oh, sure, yeah. So anyway, but what this does, it gives us an opportunity to find out what's on your mind, and by the way, answer the questions that are important to you. So you bring your money questions. They're all free. You go to wealthed.com to sign up. Once again, check out where the Brain Trust is going to be. Our phone lines are open, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. Now, in a previous hour, we were talking about incorporating, Professor Plum, and some of the benefits of setting up a corporation. And we had an email last hour from Vincent, and I wanted to get to it here because it's timely and it was a good question. He says, Vincent in Alexandria, Virginia, I had a question regarding your excellent discussion of setting up a corporation. Well, thank you. If I have a sole proprietorship and am considering setting up a corporation, is there a certain amount of business income I should realize before setting up a corporation makes sense? In other words, does income enter into the decision?
Well, income is one of the deciding factors, but it's not the only one. The other one, as I mentioned, is liability. Do you face liability? Either through employees or the product or the service that you're providing or what you're selling or what you're doing. If there is a liability, if I had employees, I'm incorporating or doing an LLC regardless of my income level, even if I'm showing negative numbers on my actual income every
year. If you have employees.
If I have employees, because I want to shelter my personal life from their, in many cases, not even their intentional screw up, but sometimes people do some very crazy things and I want to shelter myself. Or if I have partners in the business, I want to have an entity around me, not just a straight partnership, to protect myself from the liability of these other individuals. Now, on the income side, if I'm a consultant, I don't have any assets, I'm just me, I do all the work, I'm the one, everything is me, then I'm really not protecting myself from liability in any way, because no matter what happens, they can trace it back to me, and anything that's going to get sued, they're going to sue me personally and the business if I have a business. So from a liability standpoint, if it's just me, that's not going to help so much. So now I am looking for an income level. Where does it make sense? And it depends on the state that you live in to some degrees, because a state like California charges you $800 a year just to have the liability, either a limited liability company or a corporation. So there are certain thresholds, different accounting, more things, that you really want to have a little bit of income. Now, the higher the income, the more likely you're going to do it. Especially the higher the income that I can separate between the two different classes of income, employee income and employer income, profit. So the more I can separate those two issues, the better I can deal with on some other areas. Now, if I have a day job where I'm making good money, I may be making at or above the wage base, and then I have a side job where I turned a hobby into a side business that's actually making some money, that dictates whether I'm going to do an LLC or an S-Corp. Where normally with a business, I'm going to go towards an S-Corp. Where it's that situation, I'm going to go to an LLC because I've already satisfied the wage base through my day job. And I can, if I end up incorporating this side business, I end up paying a little bit more in FICA taxes than I would otherwise pay. So you really have to look at what's going on, where the income's coming from, where in the whole area, not just the one job, but everything, to determine whether or not it makes sense to incorporate. But so, then if there's a liability issue, I don't care what the income level is, I'm going to do it just for the liability side.
All right, so the first thing you're going to look at is liability.
Yep.
Second thing you're going to look at, if there really isn't much chance of liability.
Protection.
Yeah, then you're going to say income becomes more important the more you make.
Is there enough tax savings, enough other things involved to make it worthwhile?
Yeah, I mean, if you're only pulling in, you know, a couple of grand a year.
Yeah, if I'm pulling 5, 8, 10 grand a year, I'm not going to incorporate just to save taxes because there's just not enough there to make it worthwhile. You got to pay for the incorporation. You got to pay for an extra tax return and some other things. On the other side, if I have employees, and even if I'm only making, you know, I basically let the employees run it, let somebody else run it, and I just take the profits because that's the way I am. I don't actually set, but I'm only making a couple $1,000s a year. I'm still going to incorporate or do an LLC just to protect myself from the business.
Sure, yeah.
So income is one source. Liability is another source of decision making to determine whether you want to or do not want to create some kind of an entity. I don't want to say incorporate because you may only be using an LLC. And using an LLC is actually not incorporating. An LLC is a limited liability company.
And it is transparent for tax purposes.
Totally transparent for tax purposes.
Whereas
if I'm a single member LLC.
Yes. Now, a corporation obviously is not.
Corporation is an actual corporation.
Yes, yes. And it requires its own tax return too, by the way. Now, when we since he brought it up, corporations, we've heard, although for whatever reason not as much lately,
Incorporating in Nevada?
The old Nevada Corporation. And if you go way back, it used to be Delaware Corporations, which I know are still there. And that's less of a problem. I mean, there are reasons to do that. Where we really got into some hot water with, not we, where people get into hot water is the whole idea of incorporating in Nevada trying to avoid state income taxes.
Right. And for somebody who lives in Nevada and incorporates in Nevada, they're going to avoid Nevada state income taxes. But that has nothing to do with the incorporation because Nevada doesn't charge an income tax. But if you live in California, Arizona, one of the neighboring states, or any of the
anywhere,
states,
you could live in
and
Florida.
You incorporate in Nevada, but you live in California. You work in California. You just have all the receipts and everything sent through a P.O. box in Nevada and then resent to you the profits in California. That doesn't get away from California income tax. You're a resident of California, they're going to tax you. The work was performed in California, they're going to tax you. And I mean, even athletes who don't live in California, people that, you know, have jobs where they live in other states, but they come to California to work for a little bit. An athlete, a baseball player, a football player, where they, you know, they play in multiple different states. They've got to fill out tax returns for all these different states. And California, if somebody that, you know, lives in Florida, you know, and comes to California, plays 8 or 10 times a year in California, they have to prorate their income for the amount of money they made in California and pay California taxes on it.
Well, they got to do it for wherever they play.
Wherever.
Oregon, New York, Massachusetts.
Right.
Which is, now, you have a lot of these athletes who live in states like Texas or Florida where there isn't a state income tax.
So they don't have to pay taxes in their home state.
Which half their games oftentimes are played there.
Hopefully. But they do have to pay taxes on the other states if that state has an income tax. So just incorporating in Nevada does not save you income taxes unless you do the work and live in Nevada.
Now, why is it that these were so long touted as being a way to save state income taxes? You have a P.O. box you set up somewhere in Nevada. That is your home address. And, I mean, people couldn't have gotten away with it if they ever got audited. Certainly, the IRS is one of the first things they're going to catch.
Well, the IRS isn't going to catch it. The franchise
tax. You're right. I'm sorry, because it's a state
income
tax.
And I remember years ago we had a representative from the California Franchise Tax Board, the collection agency for California, on the air with us, and they said, oh, we don't mind them incorporating in Nevada. We're going to find them, and by the time we find them, not only do they owe all the back taxes, but they're going to owe interest and penalties, and we're going to get more money from them that way. So it's okay, because we'll catch them in 4 or 5 years. And it was like, wow, that's, you know.
Yeah, but the problem was
why were they being touted that way? Because we wanted to hear it. We want to find a way to avoid taxes. And it sounds really reasonable. Hey, if I'm incorporated in a different state and all the money flows through a different state, then why wouldn't it be? Well, because it's not. It doesn't, because it all comes back to me here in the state where I'm being taxed. We do a lot of things, and a lot of marketing is geared towards getting you to believe something that you want to hear. You want to hear that you can have market-like returns with no risk. Uh-uh. You want to hear that you can avoid income taxes by doing something very simple, by filling out some forms. We want to hear that there's no risk and there's great returns. Just because we want to hear it doesn't make it so.
No, it doesn't. You find out sometimes too late, and you wind up owing back state taxes and penalties, as Professor said, interest and all that. So just be careful. Anytime you hear one of these things being touted as the best thing in the world, this is going to solve all your problems, you know what you should do? Doubt it. Or if you think you shouldn't doubt it, you give us a call and we'll tell you one way or the other. 877-PLANNER. More emails coming up. We got some trivia just ahead, et cetera, et cetera. Dose of Faces, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Let's have to let the whole song play at some point, you know.
No, because I get bored of it, but that intro is just awesome.
Oh, no, it's a great song. It's a great song. 877-752-6637. I want to remind you very quickly, another workshop coming up, a series of workshops. It's the spring, whatever, I don't know, it's the spring series of retirement income strategies workshops. The next one is happening on February 20th. It is in Las Vegas, Nevada. So join the Brain Trust for the Lucia Capital Group 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshop. Professor Plum will be there. Terry Keyes, whom you've heard on this program many times before, will also be there talking to you about your money and your income strategies. So Las Vegas, Saturday, February 20th. We got Seattle, Washington, Saturday, February 27th. And Phoenix, AZ, Phoenix, Arizona, March 12th. Those are the next three. Las Vegas, Seattle, and Phoenix. There will be more after that throughout March and into April as well. So if you want to find out more and you need to know right now, find out, go to wealthed.com, W-E-A-L-T-H, wealthed.com. Sign up there too. It's all free. No money required. Just bring your money questions and bring maybe a pen and pencil or something. I don't know.
I usually provide those.
Okay, well, we'll even give you that. What more could you want?
Usually.
All right, not always. That's not a guarantee, okay?
Nothing's a guarantee.
No, no. You potentially could have paper and pencil. No, seriously, you're going to really learn something, and they're a whole lot of fun. So, wealthed.com. Back to the phone lines, 877-PLANNER. We'll try to get to an email, too, but we're going to talk to Raj up next in Portland, Oregon. Hello, Raj.
Hey, hi. How are you?
Very well. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you.
So, what's up?
So, my question is... I recently started investing in the 401k, and I've been investing in the stock as well. So is it wise to invest more in the stock or more in the 401k?
Well, you're talking about investing in the stock of the company outside of the 401k and also investing in the 401k?
Stocks in the company, the ESPP.
Oh, the employee stock purchase plan. Well, it kind of depends on what you're trying to save for. I actually like both of them, but the ESPP, the Employee Stock Purchase Plan, is done with after-tax money and is not part of the 401k, and I'll ultimately pay some taxes when I sell that. But I'm not limited to holding on to it until I'm 55 or 59 or older. It's not a long-term retirement account, but it is a stock investment. So if I'm looking for something that I can potentially use before I get to 59 and a half, something I could use potentially maybe for house purchase 5, 10, 15 years, education for my kids down the line, not something this short-term but long-term, it could make a lot of sense to do the ESPP. Now, I would want to do the 401k up to the match. I like free money. And then I like doing some ESPP, and I like balancing it out between the two of them. Now, the employee stock purchase plan gives you a discount on the shares. And so it typically, even if you were to sell them right away, which would create ordinary income on the gain of the sale, at least you get some gain on the sale usually. So I like them for longer term investments, but the fact that you're usually buying them at a discount, a fairly nice discount, 10-15%, from usually a lowest point over the last 6 months, means you've got usually a built-in gain right there. I like the ESPP, but I like free money in the 401k, so I want to do them both.
Yeah, I'm doing both, but so it's kind of, I'm doing kind of 15% in my stocks and kind of 6% in my 401k because I'm just matching my employer. So should I bump in more into the 401k or just stick to the same level what I have?
Well, I always try to push my savings a little bit more, and I'm going to go back to when might I want this money? If I want access to the money before I retire, before I get to 59.5, before I can get to the 401k money, then I'm going to bump up the ESPP. On the other side, if I'm making $500,000 a year and I'm in a really nasty high tax bracket now and I don't expect to be that high in the future, I'm going to pump up the 401k to the maximum. Of course, if you're making $500,000 a year, you can afford to pump them both up.
Well, so, are you in a high tax bracket like that, Raj?
No. Okay. I'm just in the kind of 100.
Okay.
A little over 100. Yeah.
And are you married?
Yeah, I'm married and I have just two small kids, 5 and 2.
And what's the total household income?
We are kind of 150.
150. So you're in the 25% bracket, maybe, not by much. So, it depends on when you want to use the money. I do like the ESPP. The problem with the ESPP is you are concentrated in one stock, and it's your employer stock. And so your current income is tied to that employer. Your future income is tied to that employer's stock. So you don't want to get too carried away. So I would like to do, obviously, both and build up both of them. But I like the ESPP, especially if I need some money. And you got little ones, 2 and 5 years old. Take it from John and I, about 15 years, 14 years from now, you're going to be spending some money on education. And it'd be nice to be able to have some money saved up for that can give you capital gains treatment.
Yeah. And I'm doing matching my employer percentage in the 401k as well.
I would keep pushing both of them. I would do a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Just keep pushing them both,
if you can.
Sure. Yeah. I'm doing it. Yeah. And one last thing on the same line. So what about the Roth IRA?
Well, yes, you're eligible for a Roth IRA. So do I do the ESPP, which has a discount on it up front, but taxable income on the appreciation,
or do I do
the Roth IRA, which doesn't give me the discount,
but gives you the
appreciation. Gives me tax-free. Dang, that's a good one. If it were retirement money, and I wasn't going to touch it until I'm, older than even me, I'd do the Roth.
Yeah.
Is this retirement money?
It also depends on the stock, too. You could always buy the stock inside the Roth. You just don't get the discount on it.
But you get the tax-free growth,
potentially. Tax-free. Yeah. Wow. If I need the money before retirement, I'm going to do the ESPP. If it's retirement money I don't need to touch until I'm 59.5, I'll do the Roth.
Perfect.
Okay.
I just got it. Thank you. Thank you very much. Perfect.
Okay. Raj, thank you for the call. If you have any other questions, hold on.
The trick is to max them all out.
Sure. You got unlimited
good
funds.
Trick.
Why not? This shows that, once again, as a planner, you're saying, boy, what is the ultimate goal with this?
Right.
And if this, and then. But there are a couple of different ways you could go.
And it's all of them are good choices. All of them have advantages. All of them have disadvantages.
Yes, and taxes will play a role at some point, but not knowing everything about Raj's situation, we really couldn't make a decision. But those are the choices. All right, we're out of time for this hour. If you need the Brain Trust anytime off the air, you can reach Professor Plum or any of the Brain Trust advisors at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. For Professor Rick Plum, I am Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, Nevada, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or